Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for October 7th, 2012. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me each and every week, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, everyone.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, tonight we don't have any guests, and I actually tried to get some guests and was told not this week, but maybe down the road some really good guests we'll probably have before election. But I don't think that's a bad thing, because as I started getting the topics ready, I noticed that we just had a ton of content to talk about. And sometimes it's just good for the three of us to be able to talk, because I would think that maybe somebody tunes in to hear something we have to say. Right, Tim?
Right. There we go.
Every once in a while. Well, first thing, I'm going to start off with a little small topic before we get into a big one. And it, Tim, you just reminded me before the show. Of course, sports-wise, a lot of people have been talking about how trash was rained down at Turner Field in Atlanta after a really bad call baseball-wise. But I thought it was real interesting how Matt Drudge made it political. It said, you know, Atlanta fans, trash field, Jimmy Carter and Ted Turner in attendance. Catherine, I don't know if you saw the field that got thrown on Turner Field, but do you really think Jimmy Carter was responsible for it?
No.
Yeah, I didn't know. Tim, you may have even watched it live. Did Jimmy Carter send one leading the charge there?
No, until you just mentioned it, I don't even recall seeing the president on TV there that night. I'm not surprised to hear he's there. He attends about 50 of their games a year. But more important, it's just Matt Drudge being Matt Drudge. You recall just a couple of weeks ago, right before the debate, as a matter of fact, last week, he comes out with this sensational headline that, oh, here comes this smoking gun video of Obama, you know, blah, 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 and they're trumpeting the thing, and it's on Fox News and this and that. And what it was a video that already came out 5 years ago where the president was criticizing, when he was a senator, what was going on down there with Katrina and some of that stuff. And it turned out to be just a big nothing. And that's what Matt Drudge does, David, is he has this ginormous headline, and then the story is just like nothing. And he's built his reputation doing that.
Oh, yeah. It just was. If you looked and said, you know, what are the 10 top far-fetched Drudge Report headlines of the year, I just have a funny feeling this one's going to be one of them because how preposterous the link is. And, of course,
really,
you're absolutely right about the big story, the big video is going to drop, and it was essentially recycling. It wasn't anything new at all, even if it was considered controversial. And I don't even think it was that. I mean, it certainly was not, you know, the Jeremiah Wright video by any means.
No.
So you're absolutely right. Well, speaking of things that we really can't spin away, as far as the presidential race, was the president's lack of enthusiasm, if you will, during the debate. Now, I think when we get into the content of what was said and what will come out of it, might be a little different. But as far as just excitement to be there, you know, Mitt Romney did have an edge there. That's pretty clear, right, Catherine?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I have a little bit of a different take on the debate, if we want to talk about that now or later.
Sure. We're going at it.
Okay, well, you know, I watched it. Now, granted, I was at Manuel's, and there were, like, it was standing room only, and almost everyone there was, you know, a big supporter of the president. So it was maybe a little biased crowd, but I really considered it a draw. I thought that the president was very respectful and very calm, which I think is good. I think he was maybe too calm, which was bad. But I found that Governor Romney was almost agitated. And I noticed that during while the president was speaking, Governor Romney was just, you know, making faces and moving around and obviously agitated by everything that he was saying. But while the governor was speaking, the president was quite, you know, he was still and he was watching the governor and then also jotting down some notes. And I found that sort of nonverbal part of the debate quite, I thought that benefited the president. However, I do think he lacked some enthusiasm, and he seemed a little, like, off his game, I guess. But we've got two more debates, so hopefully he'll bring it next time.
Yeah, Catherine, you mentioned jotting down notes, and that was when he had maybe his worst debate moment up until this week, the likable enough Hillary comment. He was writing down notes at that point, too. And I wonder if – I think maybe some people that do debates now think, well, I don't want to be like Al Gore, make sighs and all that, so I'm going to be busy doing something. But I'm not so sure that sometimes that note-taking he does may end up causing part of the problem. And honestly, Tim, if they were to publish all these notes, they might have like a sequel to War and Peace at this point, as much writing as he does during these debates. Tim?
Well, I guess I'm going to be the bad guy here. I thought it was one of the most one-sided presidential debates I've ever seen. I think all the action was on one side. I don't think the president, it was like he almost didn't show up, even presented with, I would say, 8 to 10 golden opportunities to hit Mitt Romney. He chose for some reason not to do so. He never mentioned the 47%. He was presented with an opportunity to hit him on Social Security. He didn't do that. Just all kind of things. And he didn't bring any of those things with him. And let's be honest, there was a result of this. There has been a bump in Romney's favor. Now, I don't know if it'll last, but we now have a 3-day rolling polling to look at. Going into the debate, the president was ahead by 3.4% in the compilation of polling. Now it's 1.4. And in the state polling, it's drifting there too. Obama was ahead by 2 points in Florida. Now it's tied. Romney, by the way, got huge crowds there yesterday. Obama was ahead in Ohio and Nevada outside of the margin of error. Now both are listed as toss-up, even though the president still has small leads there. Obama had a lead of 4 to 6 points in Virginia just a week ago. Now it's essentially tied there. Romney now leads in North Carolina, even though it's still a toss-up, and Colorado's now a tie, trending Romney. A week ago, I think the president had 332 electoral votes and Romney had 206. Now I think it's 281 to 257. But the most important thing, David, about this, and then I'll throw it back to you. The president, Wednesday night, in my opinion, was presented with a chance to close the deal, and he didn't do it.
Yeah, I think opportunity lost might be the biggest thing. I don't think that it was as horrific as it seems. I watched the debate on CNN, and if you watch the – and, of course, that's the undecided voters. And, of course, we don't know if these are the people on the Saturday Night Live video that don't even know what the election is and how many candidates there are and whatnot. But the spikes and the downtrends – and actually, there were usually always spikes. These people seem to like everything that was said and hardly ever dislike anything unless you're – talking ugly about the moderator. Everything was up, and everything was pretty equally up. You know, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, Romney had much bigger spikes, and sometimes I think had spikes that weren't as high on the positive. So when you look at that measure, it seemed pretty close. I just think right after the fact,
a narrative set in, and some of that was based on expectations, that it was much more one-sided. I think Nate Silver said it was more like a field goal victory by Romney.
No.
I mean, I think we fall short.
No.
Field goal victories a little
bit. Nate is wrong.
Well, you know, we can't really talk about this without talking about the fact that he was lying about a lot of things. You know, I mean, it's easy to win if you get up there and say, you know, I'm not going to raise your taxes. I'm going to, you know, cover pre-existing conditions, you know, da-da-da-da-da, when, in fact, those are not the policies that you're promoting in your other narrative. So, but that's why I think you almost need a fact checker on site to say, oh, you know, cut them off if they lie. But I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you, I don't know if we can expect the moderator to do that. I don't know.
I know.
Well,
how
it's
the
other
that.
Candidate's
I know how
job
to do it. Yeah, I know how to do it. It was the president's job to say, you know what, you're lying about that. That's not true.
Well, he did say that. He said that, you know, he said a couple times, that's contrary to what you've been saying. You know, that's when he came up with the, you know, I've told you all these things for 18 months, but now my policy is never mind.
Yeah. And
yeah,
he said,
and I thought,
well,
and what's funny,
Pepper, the no passion.
I thought that was one of the better lines when he said, yeah, your big plan's now never mind. And actually, they said that was the most disliked moment for the president the entire debate. And I was kind of shocked by that. I thought that was pretty clever. But, you know, so it's hard to say sometimes what some folks are going to like, if you will. But I do think this is a bigger non-deal than it is a deal. I mean, obviously Romney had to do something because this thing was totally slipped away. This gave him some sign of life. Obviously his fundraising people are static because they can actually probably make some commission money, if you will, off of some renewed fundraising. But there's a second phase to the debate. I think some of the commentators brought this up. You have the debate itself, but then you have the post-debate. And two things I think that are going to come out of this part of it, I guess we're even closing in on the end of this, was certainly once Paul Ryan and Joe Biden debate, is the V-word comment. And I think that's definitely a negative for Romney. And you hear a lot about Big Bird, big this, that, and the other. And I think that's going to be hurt him. And the second is any kind of commercials made out of it that talk about how Mitt Romney, you know, had more falsehoods than the president. And the president's actually cut two ads. One's a minute ad, one's a half-minute ad, you know, referencing the debate, showing the debate, basically saying, look, he did give a good performance, but he lied all throughout it. Now, I don't know how many points he's going to push behind this thing, where they're going to put it, but I think, you know, there's a chance that there could be a post-debate win for the president to kind of negate how much of a bump Romney gets out of this.
Here's how you reverse that. You reverse it the way that George Bush did in 2004 and that Ronald Reagan did in 1984. After initial flat performances in their respective debates, they came back much stronger.
Yeah, that's what we need.
In the second round, and the next round is a town hall style. That should be right up the president's alley. If he doesn't do well in that, then he really is going to get hurt. Now he really,
I
want to
ask you guys, how did you like the format?
They just have these different kinds of formats. I mean, the one question I wanted to hear asked, and maybe it'll get asked in the town hall, is I still want, we may have said this last week, I want to hear a question, Mitt Romney, how is your administration going to be different than George W. Bush's? Because I think that's an important question. Because if it's between the Republicans we know for the past, from 2000 to 2008, versus the Democrats we know, I think that's a bad deal for Mitt Romney. So he has to almost say, I have this alternative version C that I'm going to offer you. And he would have to articulate that. One thing I was struck by, and I told this to people that were going to, you know, put, you know, make comments on radio the next day, is I was surprised at how much Mitt Romney seemingly ran to the middle, and if some of the Tea Party supporter type folks would be against that, because he seemed to go really hard middle, if you will, hard left towards the middle, and really honestly not seem that scary, I guess, to Democrats because, oh, no, I won't do this. Oh, I won't cut, you know, taxes for the wealthy. Either, A, he was lying to somebody, basically, when he did that. And I'm surprised they didn't get more upset.
Yeah, when he said he wasn't going to cut education, that's like, I mean, the Tea Parties want the Department of Education gone. And he said he wasn't going to do that.
Hmm.
And one of my friends was like, what? He just lost the Tea Party people. I mean,
well,
I don't know if that.
Would. Now, they may hate the president so much that they don't care.
Right.
That could be the other thing out of this. And another thing that kind of struck me, Tim, I'm going to say this point, and I'm going to let you respond to both, is how much he praised Massachusetts. And, of course, every good Republican, I thought, hated old Taxachusetts. And basically he talked about how, you know, great it was, the economy, the bipartisanship, the, you know, the education system. I mean, I tell you this, if you want to run the country like a you know, like Massachusetts, that's not real scary to me, but you think it'd scare the fool out of almost every Republican outside of New England.
So as far as the running to the middle, I think that was smart because he might be figuring out something that I think is probably the case, and that is the Tea Party folks, that type of voter, is interested in beating Barack Obama no matter what the Republican candidate for president now says 30 days before the election. So, and plus, Romney doing that, he would appear to be very reasonable to the small group of swing voters out there and to people who are just now tuning in this election who really haven't, you know, been engaged at all, and there are some of those out there. And secondly, the Massachusetts thing, that probably was something of a mistake that opened up a can of worms. For instance, one of the whoppers he told was taking credit for the state's education system, and their great education system was the result of a law that was passed 11 years before Mitt Romney was elected governor up there, and he didn't have a damn thing to do with it. So I guess it was good and bad is my verdict on that, David.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be something to look at, and I think probably you got a group of people that are so locked into what they hate that they're not going to worry about that. They'll probably think, we'll get him next time in the primary. And I'm sure there are probably some Tea Partiers right now they're like, hey, we'll elect Mitt Romney, and then we'll work to unelect him in the primary next time.
Let me ask y'all both a question for your consideration.
At what point do we decide if this is a genuine staying bump or just a little sugar high, as the old saying goes? At what point do we wait a week and look at the polls again, or what do we do?
Well, I think first you have to look at the pollsters. And, Tim, I know you talked about the polls, but I think a lot of the polls have been the Gravis Group, the We Ask America, Rasmussen. I mean, the conservative polling community just saturated, the press release community or whatever you have, or you know, manipulated the Real Clear Politics averages by putting out so many. I mean, every one of those groups put out a poll. Wall Street Journal, NBC, CBS, a lot of these groups have not put out, CNN, Battleground, they have not put out polls yet, and so I want to see their polls before I'd even begin to worry about, you know, all these, you know, Citizens United groups polls, if you will. So that's one thing. Well, two, I guess that gets us into the next segment almost, and to me, every bit of Romney's bump could be gone if people respond to the jobs numbers. And, of course, I've heard 8%, 8%. No president's ever been reelected with 8% or higher unemployment. Well, we'll never find out now because unemployment's 7.8. And so that's going to skew everything. How much does it bump back from that? Catherine?
Well, you know, I'm not a big fan of polls, but I do look at them. Tim, I think the answer to that is we look at it You know, we all look at them all the time, and we see, we notice bumps, we notice changes. I think the vice presidential debate may have an impact on the polls. Well, I know we're going to talk about that in a little bit. I think the jobs numbers, they're really spinning that, like, you know, like crazy on the right, that, you know, these are fake and, you know, whatever. They're, you know, they always spin those numbers. And so I don't know what the answer to that question is. I think we just keep looking at it and we keep, you know, evaluating the polls based on who did the polling and, you know, what the numbers mean and or what they don't mean, if we can determine.
Yeah,
what about
the
jobs numbers, Catherine?
Pardon?
How will they affect things? How will the jobs numbers that came out Friday affect things? That's the other thing.
Well, I think those job numbers, I mean, I think that those of us who are employed look at those job numbers and we think, oh, well, that's good news. The people who are unemployed are still unemployed. So they look at those numbers and they go, well, you know, that's all fine and well, but I still don't have a job and neither does my neighbor. I think, you know, there's a lot of spin about how, well, it doesn't take into account the people who have stopped looking for work. But, you know, we never look at that. So you can't really, you can't, I mean, that's what the jobs numbers always, they always reflect that. So, or they never reflect that. How they'll affect the polls, I think we'll see that in the next couple of days. Lord knows they're polling constantly.
Basically, my thinking would be is whatever if Mitt Romney would have had a definitely like a 50-50, you know, nobody called him the consensus winner, you know, like you were saying, Tim, it would have almost been a close out there. Well, these job numbers would have absolutely slammed the door shut. Because he has this, then it may just take the race back to where it was, and you know that's still another lost opportunity for Romney. So I think this was huge for the president. Now, one thing, the Friday release date, even though it's early in the morning, I think you may lose a little bit of the news cycle if it were, say, on a Monday morning, although there have been bad job reports that have come out on Fridays that it probably benefited, you know, the incumbent having them come out that day. So that's another thing that may kind of negate a little bit of the news of it. But I think in the end, that's going to help the president get his momentum back. Put him about on the footing where he was before.
Of course, with this report and the timing of it, well, here come the conspiracy nuts. You heard them all. Well, I just can't believe it. And some people that you would think would be credible on this subject come out and talk nonsense, like Senator McCain. Now, he knows that the Bureau of Labor Statistics, he knows what they are and what they do and what they don't do. He knows they're not going to cook the books for any president. They've always put up a firewall between themselves and any politics. Why would they cook the books? And if they were going to cook the books, don't y'all think they would have done it like in June or something when we could have really made some hay out of it? I mean, it's just crazy what some of these people say. So it couldn't have come at a better time for the president, though. That was terrific that we got that terrific news after Romney was sailing around the country hollering 43 months of unemployment over 8%. Well, now he can't say that anymore. He tried to do a tap dance on it, but you know, like there's no spinning the fact what happened in that debate the other night. There's also no spin they can put on the jobs report that will change the fact that unemployment has now dropped back to what it was when the president took office and the country was imploding.
So, yeah, and I think if you look at it, a debate, unless you're on a debate team, is a performance. You know, actually, you know, the job numbers are actually about your job, if you will. So I don't think it's going to be that big a deal. And once again, I mean, John Kerry won all three debates, And I've never heard him be called President Kerry. You know, so debates will only take you so far. But, you know, we'll see how all this fleshes out. I did look at 538 on the New York Times, and that went from, I think Mitt Romney got as low as like a 13% chance of winning. He's up to 21. So, and that does reflect, that model does reflect job numbers and the polls. Now, of course, he only can work with the polls he's seen and outside of like a public policy polling of Wisconsin, which did show some tightening. He doesn't have a lot of those, what I would consider, you know, less partisan polls, if you will, to look at. So we'll have to see how it is. Also, Catherine, you were mentioning, you know, if you don't have a job, what does that mean? I think you have to ask yourself some questions. One, do I think the reason I don't have a job is President Obama's fault? Will Mitt Romney fix that quick, you know, like in the first, half year of his term? Is he going to do something to fix that? And I think if you answer correctly to or a certain way to those questions, then that might change your vote. But then if you think, you know, this is just like a, you know, some global economy stuff, this is some transitions America's going through, what do I need as far as a safety net? Do I need the Democrats' version of a safety net or the Republicans' version of a safety net? And that's what John Sides, who's, of course, been a guest on our program, said, that in times of poor economy, a lot of folks say, I'd rather have Democrats because I know I'll be taken care of. My floor will be lower. So that's another question those folks are going to have to ask. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. I agree with you. I think that is the question we hope they'll ask, but I think a lot of times it's just, you know, he's been the president for 4 years and I still don't have a job, so I'm voting for somebody else.
Well, and at the end of the day,
not that it makes any sense or, you know, is logical, but I think that some people just respond that way.
Well, and I think at the end of the day, if you have an unemployed Republican, they're going to say it's the president's fault and I'm voting for Romney. And if you have an unemployed Democrat, they're going to say it was Bush's fault and the president's trying and I'm voting for President Obama. So probably a lot of folks' political inclination is going to decide their vote, regardless if they're employed, underemployed, or unemployed.
But for the first time the other night, I really do think Mitt Romney successfully presented himself, and perceptions are reality on television. He, for the first time, presented himself as a viable alternative and not the man that they've been seeing and reading about in political advertising, right?
Well, they may.
I didn't think so, but I'm so biased that I shouldn't really comment. I thought he looked very. I thought he looked agitated and disrespectful, and I just couldn't help but think, well, what's going to happen when he's face to face with a world leader who isn't saying what he wants him to say? And that's what I thought. But, you know.
Well, I didn't see the agitation. And as far as disrespect, of course, you have 4 years ago John McCain saying that one and pointing at the president, and nothing was near as disrespectful as that was.
Well, remember in 2000, when Al Gore was running against Bush, and Al Gore was making faces and while Bush was speaking, and it was really badly received. That was the same feeling I got the other night from Romney.
Yeah, I think part of that comes in when they showed that Vice President Gore walked into his personal space. You see the faces with that walking into his personal space in the town hall, and I think those two images get captured together. Of course, the format, they stayed strictly behind their podium, and that wasn't a factor. I'm just surprised coming out of this that they haven't had a Mitt Romney debate Big Bird on the viability of PBS debate. You know how they like to start things on Facebook, you know, this, that, and the other.
Oh, there has been so much Big Bird stuff, and it's some of it is hilarious. Like, do you remember the texts from Hillary thing? There's a great one with Hillary's on the plane, and she's got her sunglasses on and her phone, and Big Bird's sitting, like, standing right next to her, and she says, check, I've got the bird. We'll take him to a safe house in the morning.
Yeah, I mean,
Bird.
I think
I was just going to say, Big Bird on Saturday Night Live last night. Now, that was hilarious. It was.
Yeah, just the
especially
fact that they put it in.
Yeah. But especially the part where he said that, actually, I like all the attention I'm getting. Just a few days ago, I just blended in. I was your typical 8-foot-tall bird that could talk.
But I do think that this is going to be one of the key narratives that come out of this debate. And when that comes out, that's actually substantive instead of just style. And that may end up being one of the things that turns this debate win into less of one, if you will.
I agree.
Let's talk about another perception thing, but on a much, much smaller scale. Now, as y'all know, the Kudzu Vine covers all the southern states. Sometimes we cover border states, but I just had to go outside of the South because, frankly, our politics has got boring compared to Maine. There is a Maine state Senate race where a lady apparently, one of her hobbies is playing World of Warcraft. I've never played it, but I get the idea. You play some kind of fantasy thing and you look like some kind of medieval space character or something. Well, this lady, they've gotten her character, and she looks like Mean Lady Shrek, if you will. And she's an orc. I'm not sure exactly what an orc is, how that's different than Shrek, but that's just
Big
gremlin. A lot
orc
different.
An orc is very evil. That's from Lord of the Rings. It's a very evil, very nasty character.
Well, they have done a mailer. They've done a whole website. I must say a poorly done website. I mean, honestly, you can find people that can build your websites for, not that I'd want to take this one on, but you can find somebody to build a better website than this one they've got. But they talk about how she, I guess, gets in chat rooms and talking about World of Warcraft and then brings in politics into it, if you will. And it's kind of crazy. I kind of have two questions about it. One, you can say, is this fair? And another question you can say is, will it work? And then, of course, some people would say, well, if it works, it's fair because the ends justify the means. It was some political consultants. Catherine, since it sounds like you know a lot about the orcs and all, I'll let you have the first stab at this, and then we'll go to Tim.
Well, I know nothing about World of Warcraft, but I do know about orcs. Well, I think that this is it's a teaching moment for anyone who's planning on running for office. You just have to be careful what you do. You know, you have to recognize that whatever you're doing, especially online, is probably going to come out one way or another. And either you reveal it yourself or you wait for someone else to do it. Do I think it's fair? I don't think it's fair or unfair. I don't think there's anything wrong with playing video games. And there was some discussion on where I saw it on one of the local blogs about, you know, they said that, you know, she played 22 hours. Well, there's no evidence that she played that often. That's the average that people play. And, you know, if you looked at how much time I spend watching reality shows, you know, I think some people might go, wow, doesn't she have anything better to do? But I don't think there's it's wrong to spend some of your time doing whatever it is that you like to do. She hasn't hurt anybody, as far as we know. She hasn't broken any laws. She hasn't, you know, embezzled any money or any of those kind of things. But it is provocative and, you know, it garners some attention. But again, the teachable moment is just be careful what you do and be prepared to defend it or expose it or, you know, whatever, because it's going to come out.
Yeah. Tim, I don't even know if level 68 orc rogue girl is that's good or bad. I don't think she's a level 68 politician. I have a funny feeling that she probably is not one of the recruitments of the main Democratic Party, if I just had to guess. But, of course, like I said, I'm not real versed in Maine politics.
Well, you know, Catherine made a good point on a grand scale, and that is you do have to be so careful today if you're going to run for political office at any level, because in this age of instant news and instant gratification on the internet, somebody is going to, you know, probably come across any little something that you did or said years ago or that you might be doing now, because on the surface, this would seem to be, you know, just such a trivial thing. I mean, a person is an online gamer. Well, that's not my thing, and I'm not sure why anybody would want to waste a lot of time doing it. But you know what? A lot of people would like to know why I collect buttons and baseball cards and why I waste my time doing that. On the other hand, let me ask you something, David. I'm going to get a little trivia question. Have you ever heard of a guy called Rich Lott?
No, I've never heard of Rich Lott.
Well, the reason you probably haven't is because he did not get elected. In 2010, he was a popular Tea Party candidate up in Ohio running for a congressional seat. And then all of a sudden it came out that he was a member of something called the Viking German Reenactment Group. They're actually Nazi reenactors. They put on the uniforms and smile for the cameras and everything. And there's this picture of him in an SS uniform smiling. And even the very conservative Republicans turned off to him, and he didn't, and he just faded from sight, didn't get the nomination, and now he's a parlor joke, as it were. So there's a lesson to be learned there. Not that I'm comparing this woman in Maine to him, but you see what I'm saying, where things like this could go.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, a lot of us might not want everybody to know all about our hobbies. Her unfortunate thing for her is her hobby is, one, online, and two, it comes with strange costumes. And, of course, they say, you know, don't wear funny hats. Well, she's got this character that, even though it's a total computer animation, it's become, you know, an extension of her, if you will. It'll be interesting to see. I kind of wonder if this district is a real swing district, or if it's one of these districts that a Republican won by 30 points last time and a win by, you know, 25 this time, and there was just no sense to go here. Sometimes I think if you're a political candidate and you're a big favorite, you don't have to take every shot. And maybe the president was guilty of that, thinking he was doing well, he didn't have to take every shot, but he's in a little closer race than our orc lady here, I have a feeling.
So you might be musing then that because this kind of a wild shot was thrown at this woman, that perhaps she's involved in a close race?
No, I don't think she – well, I wonder. I just wonder. I don't know enough about the district, but I just – sometimes I know how candidates or how parties recruit candidates for tough districts. When it's a close district and you can win it, you go out, you try to get a certain kind of candidate, and I hate to say it, but this lady's probably not that kind of candidate. And so I have a feeling that this is, you know, and I don't want to name names here in Georgia, but we've seen them, you know, candidates that's like, I'm just glad old so-and-so's running for that seat because that gives us somebody to vote for, but we don't really think they have a great shot. I have a funny feeling it's that kind of district. If anybody happens to be listening that knows Maine politics, please somehow get with us and set us straight or what have you. Well, we're going to go across the country for another little short topic because this is, I guess, this is what I've spent about 3 hours this past week doing, and you can judge how valuable that is. I've just found about you can take college classes directly on your phone. I downloaded the new software, and it automatically put in iTunes U, which I may have had before, but it did a new version. And so I just happened to look at it. I saw that I could take a class called Elections 2012 from Stanford University. So I thought, well, let me download this course, and I'm just going to see what this is about. And I was just fascinated.
they have a pollster that actually works at Stanford University, and he just totally explained why robo-polls, if you will, are just not real valuable. I think we had all had sneaking feelings that they weren't real valuable because of the cell phone aspect, but then the language aspect, you know, sometimes socioeconomic status gets involved. And really, if you're just not doing live calling at this point, he tells why your polls aren't good. Then there was other things. They had Mark McKinnon, who worked for President Bush, who was a Democrat, and I believe actually said he voted for President Obama, or certainly said he couldn't work for President or Senator McCain on the presidential race. They also had Chris Lehane, the leading guy that writes the textbooks in most high schools, the American pageant, did a whole thing on the history of the presidency. Just fascinating stuff. And it's not just, you know, snarky. It's real education, if you will. Catherine, had you heard about things like this before? I don't know if I sent you the links, but obviously I'd be too busy with other things besides this. But what do you think of this?
Well, I think it's I had not heard of. I mean, I've seen some of these, you know, college courses on tape that you can buy, but I had never heard of this, and it sounds really interesting. And I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but I intend to, you know, download it to my phone and take a listen. I think it's always informative to hear what, you know, what smart people have to say about our political situation. And to get a better understanding of how these processes work, like polling and all this, I think it's really interesting. And thank you very much for bringing it to our attention.
Yeah, Tim, I also sent you the YouTube link, and I thought, well, that way you don't have to download the software to see the better of the two lectures was probably the first one. But they're going to go all the way through the election, I guess, have some post analysis. What do you think of this movement?
Well, I thought it was. The whole format is terrific. If you're listening out there tonight and you wanna see this thing, you need to look it up and see it. It is wonderful. It features both Republicans and Democrats talking. It's not a one-sided thing. And let me give you the disclaimer, of course, which is this was filmed on September, I believe, the 25th. And of course, that was, you know, 8 days before the first debate, and things had changed just a little bit before then, because at that point they were all in universal agreement that the thing, barring some major thing like they said, the presidential debate, that they said it was over. So, but don't look at the content, just look at the format. I think it's terrific. Wouldn't you guys love to sit in a class for an hour and a half and listen to those learned people talk the nuts and bolts of politics at the highest levels of the country, I might add. It's great, David. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I just feel glad because I'm sure that those poor Stanford students are paying several hundred dollars a credit hour.
Oh, yeah.
Not including all their other fees to have that course, and I'm getting it all for free. Kind of like, Tim, when you and I went to see Cokie Roberts at
right.
Berry College, obviously a much smaller, less
yeah.
prestigious university than Stanford. But you could, and it was the same kind of thing, you know, some different opinions than you're going to hear just reading on the internet, which is obviously a great source. I mean, it was amazing. I think sometimes if you really read, you knew a lot of the answers to the questions they were asking, if you will, just because you could tell you studied up. But it's interesting to look at things like that and see where our educational system will go, because you could almost see maybe even high school classes saying, look, we're going to look at this. If you have block scheduling, you could almost do one whole lecture just one day of the week, and you're giving kids, you know, Stanford University level class in any high school.
Oh, it was wonderful,
yeah.
Man! I enjoyed every minute of it. I'm glad you sent. As a matter of fact, I've added it to my favorite, so I can go back and watch it again. It was that good.
Yeah, and then on that channel will give you the next one, and the next one was the history lesson, and they'll keep doing different things. That'll be really good. Well, since we're talking about education and we're in Georgia, we've talked about the charter school amendment. We talked about a length, I guess, last week or the week before. Well, I think we mentioned in passing that John Barge,
the Republican state school superintendent came out against the charter school amendment. And a lot of educators or educational people that are on school boards that are Republican have come out against it. But a lot of the pro-charter school amendment folks have started to get to the point where they're suing different government officials. I think they're coming after Dr. John Barge. And it got me to thinking, there are zero statewide Democratic elected officials. If knowing how the Republican Party functions, there's a good chance they're going to remember this and they're going to go after Dr. Barge in 2 years. And if it was in his own primary, I don't know that he really stands a good chance of winning renomination in his own party. And if he were to switch and say, I switched because I was pushed out, because I stood up for public schools, that might be a little bit different of a party switch. That might be one that we could respect. And if he were to switch, I think he might have a very good chance at winning re-election in the general election, and he would almost become the de facto head or the top elected official in the Democratic Party. Tim, I know I've thrown out a lot of steps in this process, but how far-fetched does this sound?
Well, it's not far-fetched to think that someone to the right of him may decide if they sense an opportunity to take him on in the primary. That being said, from everything I've been able to hear of and read about Dr. Barge, he's a pretty solid rock rib conservative Republican, and I would be a little bit surprised if he switched. I do want to say this, it just on the off chance that he might actually be listening or something tonight, it took great courage for Dr. Barge to do this. There was no political advantage to doing it. This man took a stand against his own party based on nothing more than principle alone. Would you not agree with that, Catherine?
I absolutely agree with you. I think that it was very brave and very the sign of a very strong intellect and a principled man. I've also looked. I think he's quite conservative and quite a Republican. And I sort of feel like we should be able to get our own Democrat. You know, I know that the Democratic Party is not in the best shape right now, but I certainly hope that within 2 years we would find someone who's a, you know, staunch Democrat who could run as the school superintendent instead of having to try to draw someone from the other party.
Well, that's true. But I can also add this, a word of warning to Dr. Barge. Roy Barnes won the Profiles in Courage Award from, you know, the Kennedy folks, and then he lost. Right,
David? Yeah.
Well, and we talk about him being a rock-rib conservative, but if you look at his job, he's in charge of education. And what is the number one issue for Republicans in education? It's, you know, privatizing education, school choice. I don't know how he feels on abortion. I don't know how he feels on gun control or, you know, progressive tax systems or anything else. But if he's running to be state school superintendent and he aligns with his job's issues better with the Democratic Party, it may just be a better fit, and he might be a pro-life Democrat on this, the school superintendent. And even if you're, you know, pro-choice, I don't know that if you're saying he's the school superintendent, how does that matter, if you will? It's kind of a moot point because on his issues, he fits better with our party than the Republican party.
But I got a question for you, David. You're an educator yourself, and that's why I'm throwing this question to you now. Do you not think that Dr. Barge has taken the particular stance he has taken simply because he is a fellow educator and has seen the value of local control by school boards, as well as the strength of the public school system.
Oh, I do think, Dr. Barge, and in a lot of ways I think Kathy Cox or the K were educators more than politicians, and they both opposed school choice, and I thought that was actually, from an educational point, a really good thing that we had Republicans that, you know, believed in public schools, because then they could begin to kind of hold the water, if you will, from that movement and the party that really wants it, if you will. But I do think if somebody runs against him from the right and defeats him and they're not an educator and all it is, you know, privatize, then we're going to lose something. I'd much rather have him in office as a Democrat than out of office, if you will, if that's my choices. And I really think, given what the Tea Party does these days, I think that may be the choices. I mean, if they're going to come after Lindsey Graham in a U.S. Senate race, and he's a multi-term senator, a national figure, how much trouble is it going to be to pick off a down-ballot candidate in a Republican primary that disagrees with his party on the signature issue in education?
Well, here's my question, and, you know, I mean, I know how I feel about this this issue, but are all the Republicans in favor of this? Because I thought there was some discontent in some of the rural school systems about this whole policy.
Oh, it's not all. It's definitely not all, but key ones like Chip Rogers, Nathan
Right,
Deal.
So he's going against the leadership. He's going against the leadership, but that doesn't, you know, that doesn't always hurt you.
Well, and if that amendment passes, which the polling shows that it's likely to pass, just because people think, oh, it just means, you know, more choices, good things, you know, people kind of get a cursory look. And constitutional amendments almost always pass. The one on transportation tax being one of the rare exceptions, because usually those statewide, you know, amendments always pass, whether it's about blueberries or anything else. And then people could have said, not only did he disagree with us, he was on the wrong side. He was on the Democrat side, because that's who pushed him. I can see the campaign building against him, and I think he could get out ahead of this thing. And, you know, I will tell you this. I think when the Democratic Party in Georgia makes their comeback, it may be with some people switching parties. Not a ton of that, but a little bit. I mean, you're talking about the Republican Party. They've had two governors, and both of them called themselves Democrats at one time. You know, when the move happens, there's going to be some leaders, if you will, following, although this may be a chance for him to be more of a leader than a follower if he plays it right.
David, he knows what mine and your state representative knows. As you know, she, too, is an educator, and she told me point blank, it's this simple, she said. This is an attempt to try and destroy the public school system.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously defunding the thing's probably not helping up in your county, because kids for, what, the third year now are going 4 days a week.
Right.
That's
right.
Because,
they're already bleeding
state legislature.
Dry.
Yeah, they have no interest in, you know, raising even some taxes to try to close that gap where you can have 5 days of school, which I think most people would expect.
And what would happen if the state suddenly got the opportunity with an appointed commission that they're in control of to divert funds,
More
funds away? What would happen then?
It's a huge boondoggle.
Yeah, and there are some people in our own party that I kind of get leery of. Alicia Thomas's husband works for a group that's all into vouchers and whatnot, and he's on the Cobb County School Board. I don't know why Cobb County voters have allowed this, and he won in the Democratic primary. So we see, you know, some of that going on too in our own party.
I personally think one of the problems is that we talk about charter schools as this, you know, sort of, you know, it's this catch-all. But really what we're talking about there's two kinds of charter schools. So we've got public charter schools, which are good. You know, they've shown to be helpful to local school systems. And then there's the for-profit schools, the for-profit charter schools. And I think that's where people don't understand what the difference is between the two types of schools. And I think it's just a giant boondoggle to try to say, oh, you know, because some people's kids probably go to charter schools, public charter schools, and they're like, oh, we like charter schools. We like our school. But they don't understand that what we're doing is, what we're suggesting by passing this is allowing these for-profit schools to, I don't want to say take over, but to take a chunk of our public education money.
Well, it's like I said in my outrage. It's like I said in my outrage, David, just a week or two ago, or whenever, I believe it was last week I did it. You know, the question is, you know that these Republicans for years have screamed about local control of schools. We're all for local control of schools. Well, what about now? Well, I'll tell you what about now. That was before they took the state of Georgia over. Suddenly they're for state control of schools, and it's hypocritical, isn't it?
Oh, yes. And there's a lot of things. You have charter schools that may be religious schools, and that gets in entanglements in the First Amendment. Additionally, I think even some conservative voters don't realize this, is if one religion can get money, another can. You could have, you know, Islamic-funded public school or Islamic schools funded with public funds, and I think there's a lot of folks that might go, I didn't realize that. So it may just be better to keep the system we have and try to improve it, because there's so many things that people don't consider. Well, the last topic, and I guess it'll have to be a quick one with about 3 minutes left, another report talking about particularly a Gallup poll showing that younger voters are less likely to vote than last time, if you will. And, of course, that would hurt the president and Democrats up and down the ballot, if you will. How likely is it, do you think, there's a major drop-off in the vote of voters, say, 18 to 30, Catherine?
I think there's going to be a drop-off. I don't know what determines major. I think we've done a pretty lousy job of preparing young voters for the marathon instead of a sprint. You know, when I was growing up, I think a lot of voting behavior comes from your family. When I was growing up, you know, we talked about politics a lot in my home, and I knew that just because you elected someone on Thursday, that by Saturday nothing was going to change, and that, you know, it took more than 4 years to affect real change, that, you know, change is a long process, and once someone is elected, they're elected to represent everyone, not just the Democrats that elected them. And also, I was, you know, fortunate to have a very regular voting family. We voted in every election. It was, you know, part of the deal, like you voted every time. And I think we do a disservice to young voters. They, you know, like, I think as much as I love President Obama's 2008 election, I think that a lot of people, you know, a year after he was elected, were like, well, where's the hope and change? Well, it's coming. It just takes a long time.
Yeah, and I guess people need to be kind of habit-one voters. I mean, you just know you have to get there every time. You know, like you do other things in your life. It has to be consistent. Tim, your thoughts?
Well, Chuck Todd addressed this subject just this morning, talking about enthusiasm. He said that in 2008, 72% of young voters were enthusiastic about voting. This year, that number is at 52%, and that means surely that less young voters will probably vote. And in this case, that is not good news for the president. They need to really kick the voter outreach into gear
to try to get these younger voters to the polls, because younger voters staying home in those numbers are just as good as votes for the opposition.
Yes, and that would be key to watch. Well, I guess we've talked about the early vote in the past. Maybe somehow people can use that. I know the president's Get Out the Vote director for Ohio talked about how, you know, up until, I guess it's about mid or Tuesday of this week, you can register an early vote on the same day, and if they do a lot of that, particularly like on college campuses, that'll be a way to make sure those people have, you know, already gotten in. Well, I think it was a great show, considering we had no guests and it was just us. I think we carried it nicely.
I think it's good for us to do this every once in a while, just the three of us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, of course, after the election, I have a feeling we'll have more of these than not, because, of course, the guests, certainly the candidate guests, go away for a while.
Yep.
Good evening, everybody.
Good night,
guys.
We are the heirs of that first.